You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Good morning to you all, both those who are here in the meeting house this morning and those who are joining us on podcast and through our Facebook account. It's good to be with you once again, and the theme of our service today is In Praise of Shadows, an appropriate theme on this overcast winter's day here in Adelaide, where we're surrounded by storms and squalls and bright shafts of sunlight. We have a beautiful service this morning. We've got some music with Brendan, and these will reflect the times of the day, the dawn moving through the day and into the evening, and then a reading from Erica from the Japanese book In Praise of Shadows. So we're going to move now into our prelude, and for those of you who can't see the slide, who are not here, it's from Camille Saint-Saëns. We give thanks for a new day with all it will bring, for a new week and all it will offer. At moments of celebration, challenge and consolation, may we draw from the inward light. May that guiding light enable us to navigate with wisdom, insight and compassion. And you're invited to say with me, Amen. I thought I might introduce to you the idea of a sacred gesture. In many different traditions, there is a putting of the hands together and bowing as a sign of respect. In different churches, there is the sign of the cross. If you're Western, that way. If you're Eastern, that way. But maybe there's one that Unitarians might be able to adopt, where we might take our hand and touch our head, bring it down to our heart, hold our hands together and open them to the world. Let's do that once again. Head, heart, hands in service of the sacred and celebrating our embodied self. So that's something you might like to practice and bring into your day. Sometimes we're stuck in our head or filled with our emotions or overactive and out there. How do we bring ourselves back into harmony? And now candles for sharing. Joys, sorrows, insights and milestones. Please be brief. Silent candles are welcome, listening in silence with an open heart and mind. You're invited to come forward and share, and we're reminded that candles cast a flickering light where shadows and light intermingle. So let's hold these concerns in a moment of silence. We give thanks for the gift of life and for each other, and for love, boundless and never-ending. God of many names beyond words, concepts, religions and philosophies, yet glimpsed at the most unexpected moments, receive these our prayers. We yearn and hope for changed circumstances, yet may our prayer change the ways in which we respond. God, deepen within us an intelligent compassion that we may with wisdom and dignity live this gift of precious life. Amen. And now Erica will read for us from In Praise of Shadows by Junichiro Tanizaki.
A reading from In Praise of Shadows by Junichiro Tanizaki, born in 1886 in Tokyo, died in 1965. This is part of an essay on aesthetics and tradition. A Japanese room might be likened to an ink wash painting, the paper paneled shoji being the expanse where the ink is thinnest, and the alcove where it is darkest. Whenever I see the alcove of a tastefully built Japanese room, I marvel at our comprehension of the secrets of shadows, our sensitive use of shadow and light. For the beauty of the alcove is not the work of some clever device. An empty space is marked off with plain wood and plain walls so that the light drawn into it forms dim shadows within emptiness. There is nothing more. And yet, when we gaze into the darkness that gathers behind the crossbeam, around the flower vase, beneath the shelves, though we know perfectly well it is mere shadow, we are overcome with the feeling that in this small corner of the atmosphere, there reigns complete and utter silence, that here in the darkness, immutable tranquility holds sway. The mysterious Orient, of which Westerners speak, probably refers to the uncanny silence of these dark places. And even we as children would feel an inexpressible chill as we peered into the depths of an alcove to which the sunlight had never penetrated. Where lies the key to this mystery? Ultimately, it is the magic of shadows. Were the shadows to be banished from its corners, the alcove would in that instant revert to mere void. This was the genius of our ancestors, that by cutting off the light from this empty space, they imparted to the world of shadows that formed there a quality of mystery and depth superior to that of any wall painting or ornament. The technique seemed simple, but was by no means simply achieved. We can imagine with little difficulty what extraordinary pains were taken with each invisible detail. The placement of the window in the shelving recess, the depth of the crossbeam, the height of the threshold. But for me, the most exquisite touch is the pale white glow of the shoji in the study bay. I need only pause before it, and I forget the passage of time.
In his short essay in Praise of Shadows, the Japanese writer Tanizaki evokes a traditional Japanese home and aesthetic. The key to this mystery, he writes, is the magic of shadows. And let me return to that enchantment later in my talk. But now I invite you to a more immediate memory for those of you living here in Adelaide or elsewhere in South Australia in 2016. On the 28th of September 2016, I recall I was working quietly, writing up patient notes in my office, when suddenly the screen went blank. Unbeknownst to me and to many others, two mini tornadoes had brought down around 20 electricity pylons, reducing them to what looked like a Meccano set. For those of you old enough to remember Meccano. Oversensitive wind generators turned off the whole grid. And South Australia, the whole state, lost its power supply. It costs around $360 million, apparently. And maybe it caused us all to reflect. For those of you who are around at that time, I think we all remember it. I was working at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital on that day, where I was then based. And a few seconds later, the hospital power generators began. And thank goodness for those people who were in theatre or who were on ventilators in intensive care. But it took quite a while after that for the engineers to restore lift access and other electronic connections to the hospital. And it became very disturbing for many of the patients, so I and a couple of others spent our time talking with nursing staff and some of the patients as we all tried to reassure one another. The most difficult thing for many of the nursing and other colleagues was the fact that our mobile phone reception suddenly became almost non-existent. How were they when to contact one another and organise for children to be picked up or transport to be arranged? Eventually I left and drove back to my home at Bel Air. There were certain traffic lights still working semi-miraculously, and I passed a train just kind of stuck there, frozen on the line. I'm not quite sure what happened then. But up from above, from the car park up near Bel Air, one looked over the whole city. And I remember thinking of the time, there were certain isolated lights there. And I thought, for thousands of years, that's what that plain would have looked like, without signs of human habitation. A few cars darting here and there. And then going home and lighting some candles. What was also revealed at that time was something which is largely absent from the Adelaide sky, a vivid experience of seeing the stars. And if you drive back to Adelaide at night from further in down the freeway, you'll notice that there's a huge light shield that lies over the city at night, sometimes reflected under the clouds. For Adelaide, like many cities around the world, suffers from light pollution. And if one investigates this, one finds that the Earth is suffering more and more from light pollution. And there's a beautiful book called The End of Night. And in that, the author talks about how destructive our over-illuminated Western civilization has become. So few people, and we're the exceptions here in South Australia because we can go to the Flinders Ranges or down to the Fluro to see the night sky. But in large parts of the world, the night sky has been lost in human-generated light. We've also, with that, perhaps lost our sense of wonder. Now we gaze at a different source of light. We're focused on our screens. This is enormously damaging for many other sentient creatures. Birds migrating are confused. Breeding patterns for animals are disruptive. Many animals are lost in collisions with vehicles due to the confusion caused by lights. And in our fixation on security, many buildings are overlit. They offer a false sense of security, in fact, as the research shows. So light has become our focus, and I would suggest to you that perhaps it's our uncertainty, because when we can't see or see very far, we feel that ancient archetypal fear. What might be lurking there in the darkness? Tanizaki, in his evocation of the Japanese house and the Japanese temple, is by no means offering a romantic return to the darkness of ignorance and of superstition. Indeed, the whole essay is on the interplay between modernity and tradition and finding a way through to reconcile those in ways that give life to people. His book talks about the importance in one's home, which is the center of one's life, where we find our greater sense of meaning, of shadows, of depth, of a sense of mystery. And another writer, Paul Kingsnorth, talks about how even in the midst of artificial life, more and more people want to install wood-burning stoves in their homes. Not necessarily for heat, and there are other aspects of pollution that those wood-burning stoves bring, but a sense of the return of the hearth, of the flickering light of flames burning wood around which families gathered for millennia to tell stories and to reflect upon their deepest and more soulful selves. More and more, we buy candles, not that we need them to illuminate our homes in the evening, but their flickering shadows seem to bring out in us something which is important. So we do live, do we not, in an overlit world, and light pollution is something not to be taken lightly. And so something that we might become involved in is the International Dark Sky Movement. And there is a dark sky sanctuary here in South Australia up at Sedan, but maybe we could turn down the lights or lobby our local council for lighting which offers safety but yet doesn't over-illuminate or pollute the night sky. As humans, dark represents the unknown. But maybe it's the unknown that offers a sense of promise and of invitation. Maybe we're too over-focused on clarity, simplicity, reacting, fulfilling our desires rather than exploring what they might mean or symbolize for us. So if we want to bring a cool presence to the world through our spiritual community, inviting people to reflection and contemplation, to ask those deeper questions of ourselves and our way of life, our ethics and our being in the world, are there some things that we might do to bring some of that coolness, that embrace of the unknown into our own daily practice. Maybe one of the things that appeals to us when we visit the Japanese garden, which you can see here on the screen here in Adelaide, when we visit a different culture, is a reminder that often in that culture, it's absence rather than something which offers a way forward. The West is focused on putting things in. Often in the East, it's about removing things to see and to experience things in a more spacious, understanding kind of way. The Catholic monk, Brother David Stendhalrest, in his very beautiful book, which explores the different monastic hours of the day, writes this beautiful and challenging sentence. Night is at once a threat and a grace. A threat because when night falls, we stand on the edge of chaos. The neat little world we have created for ourselves falls into chaos. But grace also, because the protection, the divine nearness to which we have become accustomed through the chants and prayers of the day, will not abandon us. And David Stendhalrest, in that book, The Music of Silence, draws on the German poet Rilke to invite us to move through the hours of the day and the changing light so that we might care for ourselves and for those around us. So in the Christian monastic tradition, there are hours of prayer, nocturne in the middle of the night, Lourdes, which greets the dawn, prime to begin the day, terce to begin the working day, sext, a time to pause at lunchtime, known in the middle of the afternoon, vespers to welcome the dark at the end of the day, and compline, a time of self-examination to complete the day before sleeping. And while it will be quite foreign to a Unitarian or Free Christian tradition to use those monastic hours in their fullness, I think we could learn something about pausing to refocus through the day, going outside and working at the Royal Adelaide Hospital, which is a very overlit kind of place. I'm conscious of the need to go outside and look at the sky and get outdoors at various points in the day as I traverse my way around the hospital. Otherwise, I begin to feel quite unwell, quite disconnected from myself. So Brother David Stendhalrest invites us to live consciously and responsibly through the rhythms of the day. And that returns us to the theme of today, the magic of shadows. Shadows are where darkness and light mingle. They give depth, subtlety, and understanding to the human experience. They open us up to a deeper sense of who we are. And they also strengthen us in our work of shaping and healing and being present in an overheated, overlit, anxious world. For at the heart of our spiritual journey must be surely an invitation to integrate the various parts of ourselves and to strive to create in ourselves and the world in which we live a sense of harmony. Harmony is not unison. It is not to speak with one voice, but it's when our ideas and understandings come into a sense of balance, of harmony, and of richness. For after all, in the music that we've heard this morning, if there were no shades, differentiations of musical understandings, silences, how boring that music might be. And in the world of art, if there was no shade or shadows or subtlety, How could that art speak to us? So let us strive to bring into our lives a greater sense of harmony, lighting a candle, welcoming the shadows, seeking to create a sense of soulfulness in our being and in our surroundings. The magic of shadows. If you'd like to, you can substitute the word Lord for your deepest center or that which speaks more closely to your soul. O Lord, support us all the day long of this troubling life, until the shadows lengthen and the evening comes and the busy world is hushed and the fever of life is over and our work is done. Then in thy mercy grant us a safe lodging and a holy rest and peace at the last. Cardinal John Henry Newman. We give thanks for the blessing of worship today in this time and place, and in a moment of silence share a sacred communion of friendship with Unitarians, Free Christians, Universalists around the world. For life-giving theologies, traditions and practices that renew sacred community. We ask this in the name of the One from whom we all find life within our lives. And we say together, Amen. Nocturne, moving into the end of our time together, reminding us that all our days come to an end.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.